Good morning, Lee.
Howdy there, Tara.
Well, all through the Biden administration, through absolutely awful economic stat after absolutely awful economic stat, they've told us one thing, one bright spot. They were creating jobs. They were doing an amazing job creating jobs. It was unbelievable. So you should just be grateful that you have a job and vote for that. Well, the Labor Bureau expected to come out with an adjustment today. Everybody should pay attention to. And Zero Hedge had this yesterday. And this is an unbelievable adjustment. 1 million jobs that the Biden administration claimed over the course of essentially the last year actually weren't created. They're so sorry. 1 million jobs. That's 34% of the jobs created weren't actually real. So, serious question this morning. As the Bureau of Labor Statistics announces it will downward revise jobs, this is for April 2023 through March of 2024, by 1 million. Oops. 34% of the jobs fake. Are we in a jobs recession?
Good question.
Why isn't this bigger news? It is if you're like a business wonk, a financial news wonk, but otherwise, no. This is their new thing. We've been talking about this for a while, really since 2022, which is when they first did this. They did it then too, going into the midterms. Had massive job numbers, and then afterward went, oh yeah, a lot of those jobs were fake. In fact, we actually had a three-month period where we only created 10,000 jobs total. That's an economic disaster. So we're at the point now, foreign investors cannot trust the numbers that are coming out from the Biden administration. This is why resource-rich third-world countries can't get investment, because their governments are corrupt and investors don't know what's real and can't invest in the country. We have that here now. That means the average jobs created was just $158,000 a month. That's awful. That would be considered a bad job. But this is a country of what? 300 and, I don't know, 40, 50, 60,
70, who knows?
Million yeah. people. Plus a few odd assorted, thousand terrorists. I mean, I don't know. Terrorists got to work too, you know.
Gosh.
You got to feed yourself. You blow something up. In Kamala's America, 158,000 jobs a month. That's it. 34% of the jobs fake. Can you imagine if Trump faked 34% of the jobs?
Oh, yeah. If he faked 3.4%, they would be calling him out.
Well, they would. And here's the thing. Look, it's not unusual for there to be adjustments, right? Up or down. They don't get them. That happens, but not on this scale.
Yeah, and always with the Biden administration, those things are on the downward side that they're revised.
Let's look at the last time they told us this truth. This was December 22nd, 2022. So after the midterms were safely over and they could admit to the American people how bad this was, okay? Listen to this headline, New York Post. You should read this because this has been going on for a couple of years with them. And I don't know. I think we've been in a jobs apocalypse for a while. Here's the headline. Biden administration overstated Q2 job growth by 1 million. So that's a quarter, 3 months, right? You overstated it by 1 million in 3 months? That's like all the jobs. Yeah, according to the Philadelphia Fed. Well, then how many actual jobs were created during that three-month period? According to the New York Post, about 10,000. Okay, that's a jobs apocalypse. That's a jobs recession. That is a jobs disaster. So between March and June of 2022, we only created 10,000 jobs. That's it. And they just threw an extra million on there and faked the entire job creation for 3 months. So the question becomes, how bad is it now? If they're admitting before the election, yeah, we faked a, you know, 34%, basically a third of the jobs created last year. They weren't real. What are they going to admit to in December, Lee?
Good question. And plus, there's also the issue of the way that they're calculating this, and they're talking about the number of jobs they created or post-pandemic. Well, you know, obviously we know that there was a ton of jobs lost because of the closures caused by the state and federal governments. And then they try to act like that they brought all those jobs back when all they're doing is, you know, are counting those as created jobs, and all they're doing is bringing the jobs back that were lost.
If they actually brought them back, because I can't even tell.
If they actually brought them back, yeah.
So this is the new norm now. If you're a Democrat, you take credit for jobs and they just make them. The federal government just lies and creates fake stats and then you just revise it later. I don't know how you even invest in this country anymore. I really don't. I mean, it's all very fake. You have to basically just factor in, well, you know, it's 2024 heading into election. These job numbers are probably fake. By how much? You know, it's somewhere between 30 and 90%. Because that's what we've seen in the last two election cycles. Faking nearly all the jobs. In this case, 34% of the jobs last year were fake. Didn't happen. So if they had been presenting the real numbers, again, about 158,000 jobs created each month, that's nowhere near what we need. I mean, Lee, we were bringing in during that year just in illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. 200 to 300,000 a month. Again, we're only creating 158,000 jobs. There's not even enough jobs for half of them.
Right.
Never mind the rest of us. I don't know what people do. I guess everybody's just living off the government. And we're printing money. I mean, I don't know what we're doing.
That's pretty much what it looks like.
So if they hadn't faked these jobs, the debate we'd be having now would be about jobs apocalypse. But we just don't speak of it because our economic numbers are fake. This country is we're just increasingly fakely
living on lies.
Yeah, really. You know, meantime, and I don't know where these seniors are getting these jobs. Listen to this.
Caring.com did a survey of senior Americans, older Americans who are working. And one in three said they're working because of inflation. They're working because they have to pay higher costs.
So somebody's working. I'm guessing these are like low paid part-time jobs that they've taken.
Pretty much. Yeah, would pretty much have to be.
That was CNBC, by the way. Meanwhile, have to go to the local news in Chicago to find out what's going on there. I'm still not over this, Lee. The city of Chicago put together an initiative to board up buildings, as you normally would before like a natural disaster.
Yeah, like a hurricane.
Right.
Ask the folks on the East Coast, Florida, the Carolina coastline. Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, a natural disaster or large numbers of Democrats descending on a place. They're same thing apparently now.
Yeah, exactly. What's the difference?
you prepare the same way. You board it up. Why? Violence.
Now, the Chicago Board of Services says their crews have been busy the last few days boarding up businesses to get ahead of potential damages. Now, so far, they've secured 12 locations around the West Loop, downtown, and Daly Plaza area, with plans to board up additional businesses this weekend as a preventative measure if protests related to the DNC erupt violently.
So that wasn't 12 businesses. That's 12 locations.
Yeah.
Where businesses are. That's the local news.
So I guess if Republicans are a threat to democracy, then Democrat protesters are a threat to commerce.
I guess so. When they're not trying to take it over, take a listen to the rest of that.
Now, as you can see behind me, you'll notice that the front of the Garland building is covered in plywood. It's basically covering the windows and the door. And that's be able to protect the building and, I should say, the entrance of the building from any potential unrest that could happen ahead of the, you know, once the DNC does come around here, since we are anticipating some protests to take place. Now, the Chicago Board of Services says their crews have been busy the last few days boarding up businesses to get ahead of potential damages. Now, so far,
right.
They've
so
secured
violent damages expected.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure all that violence will be perfectly peaceful, though, Tara.
Well, yeah. And that makes
That's
it
the way
legitimate.
It'll be reported, yes.
That makes it legitimate. You know, it's unbelievable to me that just the amount of time and energy that we have used talking about these, you know, the January 6th, mm-hmm. I don't know, riot?
No.
They call it, I mean, when this is how you have to prepare a city, you have to assume businesses will be destroyed and then go ahead and board them up. Yeah. And yet we're told again, like you just said, we're the threat to democracy.
Oh, of course. Yeah. That's the narrative.
Yeah. And the best part of that is this. Again, from the local news, they're putting up fencing around the DNC, or they did over the weekend, to protect them from their voters.
Yes.
Now, building a wall around the venue. We're told walls don't work. Don't need walls.
No, it's inhumane.
Walls are racist.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So, we shall see. All right, we'll be right back.
100,000 anti-Israel protesters are expected to rally outside the DNC today. Hundreds of protesters marching through the streets of Chicago yesterday in the first permitted demonstration of the week. The pro-Palestinian March on the DNC is a coalition of over 200 groups. And the leader of Chicago's largest police union says most officers are, quote, holding their breath in fear of these agitators coming to town to create chaos. Meantime, a brand new report is revealing that more than 150 extremist groups are either participating in or supporting those DNC protests this week. Earlier, we spoke with the investigative researcher and expert on extremist groups who put this report together. Listen to this.
This is an alliance of Islamic extremists and communists, Marxists, and anarchists. All these groups, they worked together before, but I haven't seen them quite fuse together like we're seeing right now. And the vast majority of them support Hamas. So what's their agenda? To make the United States essentially not a factor in world affairs. And many of them have advocated or even participated in violence on American soil, economic sabotage, advocating the attacks on police. In many cases, these groups are basically terrorists themselves.
And look, folks, it shows you the situation Democrats are in. This headline from Axios. Scoop. House members, talking about Democrat members of Congress, House members fear DNC violence. They're afraid of their own voters. Why? They know the extent to which they've weaponized that. Encouraging violence on the one hand, but then on the other hand, that builds the expectation among their voters they can commit violence if their cause is just, and they expect not to be arrested. They expect no prosecution charges dropped. House Democrats attending the DNC, Axios writes, are being advised not to book hotel rooms in their own names or engage with protesters if confronted. Axios, again, liberal publication, reports that these Democrats are, quote, very concerned, unquote, about their personal security and safety. A senior House Democrat said law enforcement is telling members not to go to certain areas because they expect violence. So change your name when booking, hide who you are if you're a member of Congress, stay as far away as you can from your voters, put up a wall, erect a fence to protect yourself. But we don't get protection from their weaponized violent voters. No, the Democrat leadership's trying to disarm us in the face of their violent voters. But here's what they get.
If you look behind me over my shoulder, you'll notice those fences and snowplows in place. We've actually watched all morning as they have started to bring in more metal fencing, more barricades, and these snowplows have been kind of navigating around those barricades and getting into place around the UC. Take a look at some of this video we got earlier this morning. You can see a lot of cars have been turning around already as they're met with these new closures that have been set in place overnight and early this morning.
Yep, walls for them, but not for you. Meanwhile, this crazy idea that the grocery industry needs federal assistance to operate, needs bureaucrats, liberal bureaucrats, to tell them what to charge for food, for goods. Unbelievable. And folks, given the fact that the average profit margin across American industry is 8.5%, and it's only 1.5% for grocery stores, do you know what that means essentially? If you go shopping, right, and you have a $100 bill, that's your grocery bill now, it's $100. Kamala Harris, if she cut the profit margin on groceries in half, that'd be a lot, right? Cut it in half. Instead of your groceries costing $100, they'd cost $99.25. Are you going to notice that? I'm not going to notice that. But what shoppers do notice is that when the Biden regime began, that same $100 worth of groceries cost between $60 and $65. That they notice. So if she cut 100% of the profit margin and made these companies operate with no profit, which is what the Democrats would like. I mean, that's communism. Instead of $100 a week bill, your bill is going to be $98.50. Instead of, again, the $60 to $65 it was before she cast the tie-breaking vote on the American Rescue Act. So this isn't an economic plan. It's a deflection. It's scapegoating. It's gaslighting. You know why? Because Kamala Harris needs to get that single black mother to the polls to vote for her. And that woman is going through a ton of pain trying to feed her kids, even if she's on government assistance. So this is Kamala saying, hey, it wasn't me. It's this big, bad grocery store. These people are evil, man, but I'm going to make them hurt. The math here doesn't work. And they admitted that over the weekend on PBS and CNN and NBC, which was remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. Okay, coming up, so many things going on. Do you see this? 1 in 3 parents can't afford school supplies. Average bill going from the low 600s for the family to go back for like total back to school costs to $875. 1 in 3 parents in a survey of 1,000 parents of kids returning to school says they can't even afford school supplies. But you know what's going on here? Kamala Harris is kind of hedged in. So are the Democrats in a weird way. Because they've gotten their base to the point they hate corporations. They hate capitalism. They hate the free market. And they want to see punishment of anybody involved in any of that. At the same time, they're attacking the basics of the supply chain, going to war with things like energy that's needed to move goods, right? So you're at war all the time with capitalism. You're at war with the delivery system for the goods everyone depends on. But Democrats would like those goods delivered cheaper and on time while destroying the corporations and supply lines that bring them those things. Okay? There is, in Kamala Harris's defense, no economic plan that can bring her voters lower price goods while not destroying capitalism and corporations. What she's trying to do is impossible. She's trying to put out a policy that satisfies their bloodlust, their bizarre bloodlust against anybody who makes a profit selling something for a living. And yes, it's bloodlust. Go look at, just look at Tim Walz, look at Minneapolis, $500 million worth of damage was done because he refused to intervene. He let them burn it to the ground. These are people who want to burn businesses to the ground. They love it. They love the smell of tires. They do love it. I mean, look at Tim Walz's wife. I'm not exaggerating. I opened the window so I could smell the smell of burning businesses. They love this. Yet when it's election time, they need to promise something. If your entire philosophy is total unmitigated destruction, you can't promise to make people's lives better if your goal is to destroy the delivery system that brings them life itself, food itself, water itself. So I mean, it's a conundrum for her. I don't know how you get out of it. New poll out. 78% of likely voters polled believe, and I'm surprised they figured this out. This is good. That Kamala Harris, if she is elected, our border situation will get worse. So this is fantastic that despite the media blockade on the idea that she's the border czar, the American people seem to be figuring this out, what the cost of electing her is. Probably one of the most incredible pieces of audio last week, by the way, that I played. ABC News's John Carl. This is him in 2023 explaining that Kamala Harris was the border czar and that her job is to stop people from coming over the border. This is ABC's John Carl in 2023.
It was back more than two years ago, that the president put Vice President Kamala Harris in playing a critical role in terms of trying to stop the flow of migrants across the border. I mean,
More than 2 years ago, she got this responsibility. That was her job, to stop people from coming across the border. Okay, ABC's John Carl lying last week. She was not the border czar.
No, she's not actually, she wasn't the border czar.
Unbelievable. They just gaslight you, lie to your face. Now she's never the border czar. No, she wasn't. You sure about that, John?
It was back in 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago, the president put Vice President Kamala Harris in playing a critical role in terms of trying to stop the flow of migrants across the border. I mean, she was more than 2 years ago, she got this responsibility.
Huh, okay. Folks, do you remember the quintessential clip of the 2016 election? And we were told Trump was wrong. Trump was a racist. He was confused. Rapists and murderers fleeing the consequences of their crimes would never, ever come to America over an open border. Why, they'd just stay home and await trial. Or maybe they wouldn't.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. But I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting. And it only makes common sense. They're sending us not the right people. It's coming from more than Mexico. It's coming from all over South and Latin America, and it's coming probably from the Middle East. And it's got to stop. And it's got to stop fast.
That was 2016, and he was well on his way to stopping it. Had gotten the wall mostly funded, and it was in panels, remember, sitting in the desert. Because they were situated sideways, they were rotting. Joe Biden, to make sure that they could never be installed, despite the fact the American people paid for them with money Congress approved, Joe Biden sold them off for pennies on the dollar to get them out of there, to make sure they could never be erected. And he did it on Kamala Harris's watch as border czar. Well, here's a story everyone should know in America. They should know the name of Gianfranco Torres Navarro, because if you're from Peru, you know that name. He's the leader of a Peruvian crime gang, and he is wanted in 23 murders. He's a notorious figure in Peru, the Associated Press reports, where he's known as Gianfranco 23. Clearly, this is from the Associated Press, quote, a reference to the number of people he is alleged to have killed, unquote. He's also famous because he's got a girlfriend who has a sizable following on social media, on TikTok, where she shows off their lavish crime-fueled lifestyle, including designer clothes, resort vacations, shooting targets at a gun range. Torres Navarro's gang is known as Los Killers, the Killers, plural. Torres, you know, he's a great guy, the kind of guy, you know, as we know, would never come to the border, like, ever, because he just wouldn't do that. Wait a minute. On Wednesday, Torres Navarro, leader of the gang Los Killers, and known as Gianfranco 23, was caught by ICE in Endicott, New York, A village with a population of 13,667, about 190 miles from the post-American, post-constitutional Mecca that is New York City. Given that he is a wanted man, wanted for various serious crimes in Peru, one might ask how he made it to the U.S. The answer is he just walked in. In May, Torres Navarro crossed illegally into the U.S. near Roma, Texas, in the Rio Grande border sector. Now, it'd be one thing if he just, you know, escaped the detection of Border Patrol, right? You can't catch them all. Nope. We caught him. He was arrested by U.S. authorities who then let him go. Let him go. He is internationally wanted by Interpol. We had him. We let him go. Like millions of other illegal crossers, he was given a notice to appear before an immigration judge at some point far in the future, and then sent on his way to become a Democrat voter, which really is the most important thing here. And one day he'll probably vote Democrats. You know what? If he racks up another 23, 24 bodies, look, we can replace those people he killed. There'll be more people along soon across that border, especially if Kamala wins. The presence of Torres Navarro in the U.S., free to go as he pleases, was a direct result of the border policies of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I'm just blown away, folks, from the 99 terrorists we caught and they let go, knowing they were terrorists, they weren't confused, knowing they were on the terror watch list, to this guy, catch him, let him go. I'd really like to know, is there anybody left on earth, if they caught them, they wouldn't let them go? I do not know the answer to that question this morning. Well, the backlash against the idea that the government will just set prices for grocery stores because liberal bureaucrats who've never held a real job know better than people in the actual sector that they're regulating. Here's former grocery store executive Alfredo Ortiz explaining the reason the prices have gone up. It's not because we're making exorbitant profits. It's because we have been hit by the same inflation everybody else is dealing with. It's called producer or wholesale inflation. So they get hit with it. Energy prices go up 29% under Joe and Kamala, a record since statistics have been set. They're going to have to pay higher bills themselves in their warehouses, their storage, moving the goods, refrigerating the goods. And guess what? They're going to pass it on to you. Here's former grocery store executive Alfredo Ortiz explaining this. He's speaking slowly so Democrats can understand.
And I'm actually a former executive in the food industry for about 20 plus years, and I can tell you that this is not price gouging that's going on. What's happening is that the wholesale inflation, it's called PPI, basically, producer price index, has actually been going in tandem with consumer price index inflation for the consumer. They've actually been lockstep since the inflation started really with this beginning of the administration. And so really what they're doing is they're just simply passing the prices on, very much like if you and I had a lemonade stand and we were paying $10 for all the supplies and, you know, the water, the lemon, the sugar, and then we were trying to sell it for $5, right? There's no way that we could do it. So all they are doing is passing this price inflation from the wholesale perspective to the consumer.
Yeah, we have that very same data that shows that grocery store industry profits have decreased back to pre-pandemic levels. Right. So they're not price gouging. The cost of things at groceries are more expensive right now because everything is more expensive right now because of inflation.
He's trying to explain it. He continues.
Well, the economy is going to boom again. I mean, we've seen that, right? We've seen what happens under the Trump administration and what we were all experiencing, which was really prosperity. And under this administration, under the Biden-Harris administration, we've just seen misery. And as you guys pointed out, and you know, those charts show, the prices of everything is up. I mean, from egg eggs to bread, you know, milk, cheese, electricity, rents, insurance, everything is sky high. And again, it's not price gouging. It's basically the wholesalers, businesses trying to pass on the costs that they've been hit with. And unfortunately, you know, her policy, agenda of this being the first one is absolutely ridiculous.
I can't wait to see the second and the third one. But you're not going to get to. You're going to have to vote first to find out what is in Kamala's economic plan. She says she will tell you what it is weeks from now.
So in the weeks to come, I will address in greater detail my plans to build an opportunity economy.
Yeah, here's the problem. Voting in North Carolina and other swing states starts in 20 days. So she's going to try to send people to the polls without knowing what the consequences of that vote will be. New poll out. 78% of likely voters polled believe, and I'm surprised they figured this out. This is good. That Kamala Harris, if she is elected, our border situation will get worse. So this is fantastic that despite the media blockade on the idea that she's the border czar, the American people seem to be figuring this out, what the cost of electing her is. Probably one of the most incredible pieces of audio last week, by the way, that I played. ABC News's John Carl. This is him in 2023 explaining that Kamala Harris was the border czar, and that her job is to stop people from coming over the border. This is ABC's John Carl in 2023.
It was back in 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago, that the president put Vice President Kamala Harris in playing a critical role in terms of trying to stop the flow of migrants across the border. I mean, more than 2 years ago, she got this responsibility.
More than 2 years ago, she got this responsibility. That was her job, to stop people from coming across the border. Okay. ABC's John Carl lying last week. She was not the border czar.
No, she's not actually, she wasn't the border czar.
Unbelievable. They just gaslight you, lie to you, lie to your face. No, she's never the border czar. No, she wasn't. You sure about that, John?
It was back in 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago, the president put Vice President Kamala Harris in playing a critical role in terms of trying to stop the flow of migrants across the border. I mean, she was more than 2 years ago, she got this responsibility.
Huh, okay. Folks, do you remember the quintessential clip of the 2016 election? And we were told Trump was wrong. Trump was a racist. He was confused. Rapists and murderers fleeing the consequences of their crimes would never, ever come to America over an open border. Why, they'd just stay home and await trial. Or maybe they wouldn't.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. But I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting. And it only makes common sense. They're sending us not the right people. It's coming from more than Mexico. It's coming from all over South and Latin America, and it's coming probably from the Middle East. And it's got to stop. And it's got to stop fast.
That was 2016, and he was well on his way to stopping it. Had gotten the wall mostly funded, and it was in panels, remember, sitting in the desert. Because they were situated sideways, they were rotting. Joe Biden, to make sure that they could never be installed, despite the fact the American people paid for them with money Congress approved, Joe Biden sold them off for pennies on the dollar to get them out of there, to make sure they could never be erected. And he did it on Kamala Harris's watch as border czar. Well, here's a story everyone should know in America. They should know the name of Gianfranco Torres Navarro, because if you're from Peru, you know that name. He's the leader of a Peruvian crime gang, and he is wanted in 23 murders. He's a notorious figure in Peru, the Associated Press reports, where he's known as Gianfranco 23. Clearly, this is from the Associated Press, quote, a reference to the number of people he is alleged to have killed, unquote. He's also famous because he's got a girlfriend who has a sizable following on social media on TikTok, where she shows off their lavish crime-fueled lifestyle, including designer clothes, resort vacations, shooting targets at a gun range. Torres Navarro's gang is known as Los Killers. The Killers. Plural. Torres, you know, he's a great guy. The kind of guy, you know, as we know, would never come to the border, like, ever. Because he just wouldn't do that. Wait a minute. On Wednesday, Torres Navarro, leader of the gang Los Killers, and known as Gianfranco 23, was caught by ICE in Endicott, New York, a village with a population of 13,667, about 190 miles from the post-American, post-constitutional mecca that is New York City. Given that he is a wanted man, wanted for various serious crimes in Peru, one might ask how he made it to the U.S. The answer is he just walked in. In May, Torres Navarro crossed illegally into the U.S. near Roma, Texas, in the Rio Grande border sector. Now, it'd be one thing if he just, you know, escaped the detection of Border Patrol, right? You can't catch them all. Nope. We caught him. He was arrested by U.S. authorities who then let him go. Let him go. He is internationally wanted by Interpol. We had him. We let him go. Like millions of other illegal crossers, he was given a notice to appear before an immigration judge at some point far in the future, and then sent on his way to become a Democrat voter, which really is the most important thing here. And one day he'll probably vote Democrats. You know what? If he racks up another 23, 24 bodies, look, we can replace those people he killed. There'll be more people along soon across that border, especially if Kamala wins. The presence of Torres Navarro in the U.S., free to go as he pleases, was a direct result of the border policies of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I'm just blown away, folks. From the 99 terrorists we caught and they let go, knowing they were terrorists, they weren't confused, knowing they were on the terror watch list, to this guy, catch him, let him go. I'd really like to know, is there anybody left on earth, if they caught them, they wouldn't let them go? I do not know the answer to that question this morning. Well, the backlash against the idea that the government will just set prices for grocery stores, because liberal bureaucrats who've never held a real job know better than people in the actual sector that they're regulating. Here's former grocery store executive Alfredo Ortiz explaining the reason the prices have gone up. It's not because we're making exorbitant profits. It's because we have been hit by the same inflation everybody else is dealing with. It's called producer or wholesale inflation. So they get hit with it. Energy prices go up 29% under Joe and Kamala, a record since statistics have been set. They're going to have to pay higher bills themselves in their warehouses, their storage, moving the goods, refrigerating the goods. And guess what? They're going to pass it on to you. Here's former grocery store executive Alfredo Ortiz explaining this. He's speaking slowly so Democrats can understand.
And I'm actually a former executive in the food industry for about 20 plus years, and I can tell you that this is not price gouging that's going on. What's happening is that the wholesale inflation, it's called PPI, basically, producer price index, has actually been going in tandem with consumer price index inflation for the consumer. They've actually been lockstep. since the inflation started really with his beginning of the administration. And so really what they're doing is they're just simply passing the prices on. Very much like if you and I had a lemonade stand and we were paying $10 for all the supplies and, you know, the water, the lemon, the sugar, and then we were trying to sell it for $5, right? There's no way that we could do it. So all they are doing is passing this price inflation from the wholesale perspective to the consumer.
Yeah, we have that very same data that shows that grocery store industry profits have decreased back to pre-pandemic levels. Right. So they're not price gouging. The cost of things at groceries are more expensive right now because everything is more expensive right now because of inflation.
He's trying to explain it. He continues.
Well, the economy is going to boom again. I mean, we've seen that, right? We've seen what happens under the Trump administration and what we were all experiencing, which was really prosperity. And under this administration, under the Biden-Harris administration, we've just seen misery. And as you guys pointed out, and those charts show, the prices of everything is up. I mean, from eggs to bread, you know, milk, cheese, electricity, rents, insurance, everything is sky high. And again, it's not price gouging. It's basically the wholesalers, businesses trying to pass on the costs that they've been hit with. And unfortunately, you know, her policy, agenda of as this being the first one is absolutely ridiculous.
I can't wait to see the second in the third one. But you're not going to get to. You're going to have to vote first to find out what is in Kamala's economic plan. She says she will tell you what it is weeks from now.
So in the weeks to come, I will address in greater detail my plans to build an opportunity economy.
Yeah, here's the problem. Voting in North Carolina and other swing states starts in 20 days. So she's going to try to send people to the polls without knowing what the consequences of that vote will be. Well, the backlash against the idea that the government will just set prices for grocery stores because liberal bureaucrats who've never held a real job know better than people in the actual sector that they're regulating. Here's former grocery store executive Alfredo Ortiz explaining the reason the prices have gone up, it's not because we're making exorbitant profits. It's because we have been hit by the same inflation everybody else is dealing with. It's called producer or wholesale inflation. So they get hit with it. Energy prices go up 29% under Joe and Kamala, a record since statistics have been set. They're going to have to pay higher bills themselves in their warehouses, their storage, moving the goods, refrigerating the goods. And guess what? They're going to pass it on to you. Here's former grocery store executive Alfredo Ortiz explaining this. He's speaking slowly so Democrats can understand.
And I'm actually a former executive in the food industry for about 20 plus years, and I can tell you that this is not price gouging that's going on. What's happening is that the wholesale inflation, it's called PPI, basically, producer price index, has actually been going in tandem with consumer price index inflation for the consumer. They've actually been lockstep since the inflation started really with this beginning of the administration. And so really what they're doing is they're just simply passing the prices on, very much like if you and I had a lemonade stand and we were paying $10 for all the supplies and, you know, the water, the lemon, the sugar, and then we were trying to sell it for $5, right? There's no way that we could do it. So all they are doing is passing this price inflation from the wholesale perspective to the consumer.
Yeah, we have that very same data that shows that grocery store industry profits have decreased back to pre-pandemic levels. Right. So they're not price gouging. The cost of things at groceries are more expensive right now because everything is more expensive right now because of inflation.
He's trying to explain it. He continues.
Well, the economy is going to boom again. I mean, we've seen that, right? We've seen what happens under the Trump administration and what we were all experiencing, which was really prosperity. And under this administration, under the Biden-Harris administration, we've just seen misery. And as you guys pointed out, and those charts show, the prices of everything is up. I mean, from eggs to bread, you know, milk, cheese, electricity, rents, insurance, everything is sky high. And again, it's not price gouging. It's basically the wholesale wholesalers, businesses trying to pass on the costs that they've been hit with. And unfortunately, you know, her policy, agenda of this being the first one is absolutely ridiculous.
I can't wait to see the second and the third one. But you're not going to get to. You're going to have to vote first to find out what is in Kamala's economic plan. She says she will tell you what it is weeks from now.
So in the weeks to come, I will address in greater detail my plans to build an opportunity economy.
Yeah, here's the problem. Voting in North Carolina and other swing states starts in 20 days. So she's going to try to send people to the polls without knowing what the consequences of that vote will be.